Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
Hammer and Nigel.
Do you believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock!
I don't know about you, Hammer. I had so many things going through my mind this morning when I saw the footage of that shipping container, that cargo ship hitting the and collapsing the Baltimore Bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge. I mean, it was a Rolodex going through. Was it terrorism? Was it an accident? Was it a was somebody not doing their job? Was the bridge up to code? Was the shipping container up to code? The container lost power twice and lost its ability to control its rudder and ran right into that pillar on that Francis and the Key Scott Bridge, totally collapsed. And the footage is pretty terrifying.
I still have questions about the structure of the bridge. Now, I am not a construction worker. I've never put a bridge together.
I've seen a lot of brand new bridge safety experts on Twitter today, trust me.
Right. Let me make that perfectly clear. I have never put a bridge together. So my question to anybody that's listening that is a legitimate construction expert, is it normal for a ship the size that it was in Maryland?
Yeah, it's a big ship. Had big ass on it for sure, man. It's
going huge. Off power around 9 to 10 miles an hour, hitting the structure and collapsing the entire bridge.
Like,
is that normal?
Like a pile of toothpicks.
Right.
It went down.
So, again, I'm not going to sit here and act like I am an expert on bridges. I'm not. But is that normal for a ship that, you're right, is pretty big, it's loaded up, it's losing power, lights are coming on, lights are going off, you see black smoke coming out of the back of it, and it crashes into the middle pylon, or whatever you want to call it, holding up the bridge, and that collapses the whole thing?
Just disappeared. Just absolutely disappeared. They're looking for, I believe, 6 construction workers that were working on potholes. They rescued 2 of those workers, pulled one out of the water, one's in the hospital. One said he didn't even want care and went home.
That was awesome that 2 people were able to be rescued. And here is the Maryland governor, Wes Moore.
The preliminary investigation points to an accident. We haven't seen any credible evidence of a terrorist attack. Our administration is working closely with leaders from all levels of government and society to respond to this crisis, and not but just by addressing the immediate aftermath, but also by building a state that is more resilient and a state that's more safe. That is our pledge, and that's our commitment, and we're going to keep that commitment. And lastly, to the victims of this tragedy and their loved ones. All of our hearts are broken. We feel your loss. We're thinking of you. And we will always be thinking of you.
You mentioned those 2 that were rescued from the water, Nige. I did see an expert this morning talking about the temperature of the water at the time of the collapse.
Ooh, yeah, like 45 degrees.
Right. And with water that cold, 45 degrees, which certainly isn't the worst water in the world. If you stay in that water for around an hour to an hour and a half, your body organs start to shut down, hypothermia starts to come in, and ultimately you will probably die. And that's just with, 60 to 90 minutes being in 45 degree water. So,
you watch that video, and seconds before the cargo ship hit that pillar, it seemed like dozens of cars crossing the bridge, and then all of a sudden it seemed to stop. Did you notice that?
I did.
I watched it several times.
And because of heroes that were working on both sides, that ultimately made it so the death toll was not going to be as high as it's looking to be right now. Because the operators of that ship, they issued a Mayday alert before they crashed into the pillar, and That meant the folks working on the bridge, they shut down traffic on both sides so that way people weren't on the bridge at the time.
We can confirm that that the crew notified authorities of a power issue. You know, we had a ship that was coming in at 8 knots, so coming in at a very rapid speed. We do know that the investigation is currently going on, but I have to say I'm thankful for the folks who once the warning came up and once notification came up that there was a mayday, who literally by being able to stop cars from coming over the bridge. These people are heroes. They saved lives last night.
You know, I'm still confused because I saw early reports that there were cars that plunged in. Did you see the same reports that there were cars that were plunged in off the bridge? Griff Jenkins from Fox News, I was watching this press conference this morning, asked them about the possibility of civilians and not just construction workers, people in their cars at the bottom of this river.
Paul Wiedefeld, who is Maryland's Secretary of Transportation, I said, there's 6 unaccounted for they're looking for. 2 people came out, 1 had to be rescued, the other one was fine. So we're talking about a total of 8 people they were considering. The 6 are unaccounted for, 1 had to go to the hospital. I said, but what about cars and people that may be in the water? And he said, no, that we don't believe there are any. I said, you don't believe that there are people in the car. That's different than the information we were hearing earlier, but it doesn't appear at this point that this search and rescue mission in the governor's Team Maryland, as he called it, is under the assumption that there are people in cars that need to be rescued.
If that's true, that's a miracle right there. Because again, like you said, you watch that video, dozens and dozens of cars were going across that bridge as the cargo container was heading straight towards it. Now, later on in that press conference, the governor he was asked about that same question again, seemed to have a slightly different answer. So obviously it's an ongoing situation. We'll keep you updated.
Miss Allison, let's shift gears and play a spirited round of Is It Racist?
It's time to play Is It Racist?
Now, for those who may be new to the Hammer and Nigel show, here to explain the rules of engagement is AOC.
Is it racist? Is something racist, yes or no?
So there's a school district that is hiring a, quote, whiteness superintendent to help root out white supremacy in the school district.
This is the St. Louis Park School District, but it's located in the suburbs of Minneapolis, even though it's called the St. Louis School District. They're hiring a assistant superintendent to examine the presence of whiteness. And, you know, I don't know what it's a good gig. It's six-figure gig, right?
I'm looking at the salary they're offering. It's anywhere between $134,000 a year to $201,000 a year. So that's good money to basically look around and go, awful lot of whiteys around here.
Well, here's the thing. Look, a big percentage of white students are moving out of the district. They fled to other districts. So that in and of itself is white supremacy.
Well, it sounds like they're getting blamed for everything. I don't blame them at all.
Well, math and reading in that area, disastrously low if you look at the percentages. So requiring students to learn math, to learn reading, is in and of itself white supremacy.
So right? This school's got bad test scores.
Yes.
Because of whitey, white supremacy, evil white supremacist walking the halls, talking about Hitler, you know, waving their flags. That's what I'm supposed to understand here. That's what's happening.
So this thing, it's like people say this kind of thing. Well, that's not happening in schools. I mean, they listed off this job application, listed off DEI, CRT. I mean, you know, rooting out white supremacy. Okay, great. We got to root out white supremacy. Can the whiteness superintendent be white? Is there a skin color requirement for this job, this six figure job? I mean, look, like they want to root out white supremacy. I get it. But based on the proficiency percentages of math and reading, it appears they've already rooted out math and reading.
Right. So what happens when there's problems that involve students of minority?
Yeah,
what happens if there's, you know, some black on black crime, or maybe there's a Hispanic kid issue? Does the superintendent of whiteness get a say in that, or is he just sit in the corner, spin around on a chair? Not my problem. Those kids aren't white.
I am the superintendent of whiteness. That's an interesting job description, don't you think?
Get that on your business card and pass that out and see if you can get a job in the Biden administration.
$134,000 to $200,000 gig.
You and I are both going to be off on Friday, Nige. I am taking a little trip to Florida. You're taking a little trip to Florida.
Yeah.
Kind of a little late spring break for us. Are your kids on spring break this week?
Starts Friday.
Okay, so it starts on Friday. Mine wrap up this week. My oldest is in college, and he's been back for like a week. But for those of
so
you...
He's old enough to get in trouble.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%.
Mine aren't old enough to, you know, get the cops' attention, so to speak. You know what I mean? It's 12 and 10 years old.
Spring break wrapped up for the college students, and it continues for some others, like Nige's kids, like my youngest. Either way, the vacationing students may end up on this brand new show being brought to you by Hammer and Nigel Television.
This week on Cox, Spring Break Edition. Cameras ride along with Daytona Beach's finest as they stop a drunk LSU co-ed who tries to surf a shark.
You guys are no fun.
Then it's off to South Beach, where the boys in blue intervene before a girl named Madison gets a lower back tattoo of a pineapple.
It would have looked so cool.
Then they tackle two guys named Wade for playing hacky sack with an endangered baby sea turtle.
Bro, I don't see a sign that says I can't do it.
That's this week.
I don't even go to college.
On Cops.
I'm just here to party.
Spring Break Edition.
Dude, you mess with those baby sea turtles on the beaches? I don't know about you, but I mean, you could go to jail.
Yes.
Like, they have them protected, like, where the eggs are and stuff. And there's certain times of the night where you can't have lights on in your business or home or restaurant. It's crazy.
You know who you can mess with?
What's that?
College kids named Wade.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Boy, this next one might make me throw up in my mouth a little bit. I haven't had a good on-air puke in quite some time. I might change with this one. Cracked.com posted a list of 7 different insects that have been found during people's colonoscopies. You and I have both had colonoscopies. Somebody
not there, at the same time, not together.
It wasn't a couple's colonoscopy.
No, I didn't slap the glove on and be like, all right, my turn, your turn.
Maybe you could refresh everybody's memory. Maybe for somebody who doesn't know what a colonoscopy is.
This is where the night before, the preparation, they give you all types of laxatives and, you know, Gatorades to flush out your system.
To clear you out.
I mean, you're on the can all night. And then the next day, you go in, and the doc, they knock you out. They put a tube up your butt.
With a camera.
Right. And they check to see if there's any
polyps.
Polyps or cancerous things or things of that nature. It's actually a really healthy thing people need to do.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Just, I get it. Nobody wants things up their butt.
Well.
Most people.
Again, according to crack.com.
Allison's laughing.
It's most people. Insects have been found during people's colonoscopies. Flies.
Ooh.
Ants. Cockroaches.
How does a cockroach get in your butt? How does a cockroach get in your butt?
Ladybugs. I'm not done. Moths, bees, and yellow jackets.
Oh, no.
Have all been found inside when you're getting a inside the... The chute there, the poop chute.
A yellow jacket. I mean, you would think that thing being there stinging you and just going nuts, right?
Oh, man. This actually makes me want to get a colonoscopy. If I have something like that up there, I'd want to know about it.
Right. You don't want to be the guy that has a cockroach in his rectum. So might want to make that phone call and get that screening done. According to a, quote, relations therapist, I think we all know what I'm talking about when I say relations, right?
Like a sexual health?
Yes. There you go.
Sex therapist.
The top signs that you're bad in bed include lacking confidence.
Check.
Feeling embarrassed.
Check.
Never changing your routine.
Check, check.
And constantly feeling worried about your performance.
Check, 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 check.
Just got the bingo card right there, didn't you? Those are the things right there. Now, here's my problem I have with this this relations therapist report here. What if you really like the routine that you have? Like, if it feels good and you like it and she likes it and you guys both just want to do the same stuff, what's wrong with that?
Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I mean, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Like, the fine folks at Heinz, they're not trying to find a new recipe for ketchup, are they? They like the ketchup that they have, and they're going to keep giving it to you. That's kind of where I'm at here.
Comparing sex to ketchup?
Yes. Yes, I am. Here are to weigh in on this therapist, this sexual relations therapist, is AI Joe Biden.
I'm very good in bed. Actually, you know, I spend most of my days in bed. 20 or 23 hours a day, I'm in bed. Sometimes I poop the bed. Sometimes someone else poops in my pants in bed. All I know is that, you know, I know I'm a great lover. I know this because I can satisfy Dr. Jill even when I'm asleep. Often I'll wake up and I'll see Jill and Kamala's husband naked and smoking cigarettes. They both look sweaty. I just assumed that I satisfied them while I was asleep.
AI Joe Biden weighing in on this report.
What did I just listen to?
You listen to somebody more coherent than the real president. That's what you just listened to.
That was a little too coherent.
The thing is, Nige, with us going, you know, on our separate little family vacations here,
right,
we've got to get our bets in before Friday, because as much as I like Ron DeSantis, Florida does not have sports betting, and that stinks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because there's a big Purdue game on Friday night. Purdue taking on Gonzaga in the Sweet 16. Right now, Purdue is listed as a 5-point favorite in that game.
It's not a very big number, is it?
No, but Gonzaga can play. And this is the second time they've played this year, so that game is in Detroit. Whoever wins that game will take on the winner of Creighton and the Tennessee Volunteers on Sunday. All right, coming up next, the Indiana Attorney General, Todd Rokita, scheduled to join us in studio.
Man, he's got this COVID report that just came out that is going to, I mean, I'm shaking my head when it comes to this state's response to the pandemic.
We will talk about that report next.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Oh, yeah!
My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer is here. Attorney General Todd Rokita live in studio with us here this week, the four-year anniversary of Indiana's stay-at-home orders. I know you were in Mishawaka yesterday. You unveiled this report, Mr. Attorney General, exposing some of the real data that the state and Holcomb and Dr. Box kind of failed response to this pandemic. And I'm reading through this thing and I'm just shaking my head. And it's like, I knew some of this stuff was going on. I didn't know how bad it was. Can you maybe just start by giving us the big picture of this report?
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It's always good to be back. Look, we went through over 145,000 death records. A small team at my office went through that. We went through the positivity rates, and we didn't make this stuff up. It all came from the state's data, Department of Health. Yep. And what we found was that in a lot of instances, many instances, the positivity rates, remember when we were taking COVID tests and it tests positive?
Over and over and over.
And then maybe
again,
2 or 3 days later, we take another one, test, still test positive, I still have it. Well, it turns out every time that happened, they were counting, the state was counting those as if they were different individuals.
As if it was a new individual getting COVID.
So there's that problem. And then the 145,000 death records, we found that, you know, this was actually the state's policy for a given period of time, was that no matter what you died of, gunshot, car accident, or COVID, or whatever else, you were and you were positive for COVID at the time, you died of COVID.
And that wasn't just happening here in Indiana. That was happening all over America.
Right. So, you know, and again, there was so much unknown at the very beginning. But by the end of 2020 and into 21, I just think good leadership would say, you know what? Hey, we learned a lot. And here's what could be, here's what we have to do so this mistake doesn't happen again. Let's develop scientifically accepted and ethical criteria and methodologies and make sure it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen again. Instead, what we got, guys, was... you have no regrets. The data is perfect. It's accurate.
Right.
Well,
it's just a ridiculous thing, which started off this whole thing. I had a throwaway line almost in a press interview I did up in South Bend, which is why we went back to South Bend, Mishawaka area to unveil this 2 or 3 years ago, where I said, you know, I don't think anyone believes those numbers anymore. And I thought I was just saying what everyone understood.
Yeah.
And the governor and his staff got very, very red-faced at that. And I was... perplexed at the beginning, but then I thought, you know what? If that's the reaction, we got to dig deeper and we got to see, you know, what's really going on here. And we did. You know, I've been on this program for a million things over the last couple of years. We do other things. We're busy, but in our extra time, we went through and did this and got it done.
I think it speaks volumes about what the governor's concerned about. Right? Doesn't feel bad about shutting down businesses, calling people who just want to go to work a human petri dish. Has no problems with that. But the attorney general says, yeah, there might be something squirrely with these numbers. Yep. Here, he gets his undies in a twist.
Yeah. And I'm not putting a mens rea to it. I'm not putting an intent to it. I'm not saying, hey, there was fraud or corruption or anything like that. We looked at documents. Okay. We did a document audit, a data
audit. Who's we? When you say we looked at
my staff and I. We have one of them's right here with me, Aaron. She led the project and she had a few attorneys and a few others working with her. And again, we would do this as we had time and came out with this. Again, I'm not looking to blame. I'm looking to make sure that we have leadership in this state that ensures this doesn't happen again.
Did you buy the excuse, you know, Holcomb said, you know, we were operating with the information at the time?
Well, I think that's fair to a point. But when you get towards the end of 2020 and into 21,
yes.
And you do, by the way, we were the only first state in the nation to commission a survey or an audit on how we were surveying. And we found out through the Department of Health did its own investigation into this and found that they were over-reporting by 10% at least. And then instead of using that to better the system, they just discontinued the audit. And so,
wow.
And like nothing to see here. And that what that audit centered around is the idea that, hey, look, if you're going to sample something for the purpose of making a proclamation or a law or policy that affects the entire general population, then the methodology you use should be that of the general population. Instead, what they were doing was reinforcing their own bad bias when they were looking specifically at people with symptomatic conditions, people that were already predisposed to getting COVID. And they used that instead to bump those. And as a result, the numbers bumped up.
So if I understand this correctly, I think you're kind of in the same camp that a lot of people are. At first, I get it. Crazy things were happening.
Yes.
Nobody really understood. They were working with the numbers they had provided. But now we've got access to better ways of getting this information. And if you don't learn from your mistakes,
right,
then that's a problem.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
plus Governor DeSantis was operating within the information that he had at the time. And he opened up
right.
Florida back immediately. That could have been us.
Right. It could have been us.
It's frustrating.
And instead we had a very draconian, hammer-like, ham-handed-like, whatever cliche you want to use, thumb on us to say no. Don't open up. Don't do this. Don't do these other things. And so
we were insulted. We were called petri dishes when we had actual peaceful protests from business owners as opposed to angry mobs walking up and down the street.
Yeah. And in fact, in Europe, like in countries like Sweden, who were coming out of this or experiencing that fact that the lockdowns were bad and not good and reversed itself, instead of looking, not that I like to look at Europe for much of anything, but there was data showing that, hey, opening up is actually better for our kids. It's better for our businesses. It's better for everybody. Let's do that. But at the very least, if this ever happens again, we should be prepared with scientifically sound criteria and methodology, and we should have leadership, right? There's a governor's debate going on tonight. right?
Yes.
We should ensure as citizens that we have leadership in this state that understands what we uncovered here in this report, so that we don't get subjected to this again, because I don't think we can take it. We're losing a generation of kids who can't read. You know, a lot of it attributable to this. We lost tons of businesses. I had business owners I know who committed suicide because they couldn't get out of this thing. And right here, I mean, you could throw a stone from this studio to a business owner I'm thinking of right now that didn't make it out of COVID because he just couldn't take it.
Anything in there about the vaccines at all, and mandates, actual mandates or mask mandates?
Yeah, I didn't touch on that. But for that, you know, you guys know I fight in court. We fought Biden and won on the vax mandate for companies over 100. He's going to try to do that through OSHA, remember?
Yeah, then he
was going to mask the kids, and we won that in court. So for those, I'm just taking right to court. As long as I'm your attorney general, I will tell you I will never support, and I will do everything in my power, as long as the people elect me, to stop us from being locked down again.
Are you surprised at the negative feedback that's coming out after you and your team have simply pointed out some irregularities in terms of the COVID numbers?
Yeah, like, starting with the governor. I mean, he said, well, I don't know. He didn't work with the Department of Health. He don't know where he got the data. It's your data, sir. It's your data. It's we can certify that if you want. We did in the report. Your data was inaccurate, or what your reports and your dashboard was inaccurate, and we pointed that out. Again, he's not up for re-election. He's on his way out. This is not a matter of casting blame for 4 years ago. It's a matter of making sure this doesn't happen again. And when you have a governor that says, hey, no regrets, and the data was perfect, and the other things he said, it causes you to think, oh, my gosh, this is not good.
And back to the lockdowns. I mean, the harms to Hoosiers' mental and physical well-beings. We were telling people not to go to the gym and get exercise. Yeah. We were telling people to stay inside.
Yeah, but hit the liquor store.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Which we did, because we were following the instructions at the time, Mr. Attorney General.
And then there's stuff in there about the impact on students' learning and things.
Yeah. And the effect of the lockdowns, too, guys. Don't forget, reports have now come out that said, you know, you may have gotten a 0.2% reduction in the number of people who've died from COVID as a result of locking down. So hardly, you shut down a whole economy, you shut down or distract a whole generation of kids for a 0.2% reduction. It's ridiculous. So never again, as far as I'm concerned.
Again, Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita joining us here in studio. Earlier today, you were at this event in Shelbyville that featured a number of the major players in terms of politics in Indiana on the Republican side. I believe Donald Trump Jr. was there as well. How was that event?
Oh, it was great. It was an event for Jim Banks, and he did well. Don Jr. did well. It was a pleasure to talk with both of them. I got a few minutes to talk about things we were doing in the office and to support Donald Trump, which I do. I've endorsed him last year, and now also Jim Banks I support and endorse. And it was packed for a noon on Tuesday. Think about this, and everyone in that room had work, and I'm sure they had to leave work. But for noon on Tuesday, he had over 600 people.
My mini-me was there. Chris Hammer, I think, was in attendance.
Yeah,
there
I heard
today.
Afterwards. I was looking for him, but wasn't he instructed to come look for me or something or not?
He was, but you were busy doing stuff, so okay. He knows the drill.
As an attorney general, you look and see what Letitia James, the attorney general of New York, is doing in this witch hunt with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, they are trying to do everything they can to put this guy in jail, to bankrupt him, to get him off state ballots. And they say he's the one that's a threat to dictatorship.
It's absolutely
to democracy.
And I'm getting, thanks for that, I'm getting some questions now. Hey, why don't we do the same thing back to these Democrat candidates that Letitia James is doing to Trump? And it's a fair question. You have to understand our duties are different and our powers are different from state to state. I don't have the same powers that Letitia James has. She might not have some of the ones I do. So that scenario for me is unlikely, and it's not right unless there's a factual basis. And look, the Biden crime syndicate gives you a factual basis. But here in the state of Indiana, the prosecutors religiously defend and protect their ability. They have the sole discretion in the state to file criminal charges against anybody. So you're looking at a county prosecutor, and you know, I don't know the last time Biden really set foot here. So, you know, it's a different scenario.
I want to avoid using the criminal justice system to go after any political opponent, though.
Yeah, and that's my point too. Is that even if you could, you have to have a basis for doing something like that, not just politics, is what I'm. And so we have a bad situation. But you know, it's the reason I support. One of the many reasons I support Trump. I mean, that alone is enough. He has been through so much, and you know, I get a little bit of what he gets, you know, and it's a distraction to me for sure. That's going to stop, but it's not going to stop us. Just like I hope it never stops him. And I think that's why he gets so much support, because the people inherently understand what he's going through. They see it for what it is, and exactly how you describe it, Nige. And Sleepy Nige.
Big Nige.
And, you know, that's why he should win this fall, you know, depending on how much they steal. But in Indiana, we'll have good elections. But he should be our president again. Today, I said he was a great president when he was here, and he's going to be great when he was in here before, when he was in the presidency before, and he's going to be a great president again.
So one more time here before we let you go, the big takeaways from this report that you put out in regards to the COVID information in Indiana.
And where can people find this? I mean, they can read it for themselves.
Oh, yeah. It's only 30 pages. And by the way, he said that we don't know what we're doing and that we didn't we dreamt this up. Look, it's a 30-page report. It has 113 cited sources in it that we used. And look, you don't have to be a medical scientist or a doctor to audit numbers. You have to be smart. And look, we go into court every week having audited numbers and everything else. And I got a lot of smart people in our office, and that's what we did. Very inflated death counts that caused us to make public policy decisions based on a thinking that we had more deaths by COVID than we really did, and unsound positivity rates that caused the same thing. Those are two of the large takeaways. And the fact that we had our own survey commissioned, our own audit commissioned, and once we found out that the study was producing results that were 10% lower than what were reported before in Indiana, instead of relying on that data or furthering the study, we cut it off.
Wow.
He is the Attorney General for the state of Indiana, Todd Rigetta. Mr. Attorney General, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Hammer. Great to be with you guys.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Coming up after 4 o'clock. Oh, boy, the Indiana GOP gubernatorial debate is happening tonight. We'll give you a preview. Oh, I can't wait.
You got the beer on ice, Nige?
Oh, man, it's going to take a lot more than beer to get me through that.
You got the fireball in the freezer?
I've got the extra large bottle of Maker's Mark. like the half gallon bottle. Listen, if you're an Amazon driver and you're peeing in a bottle right now, please know that your job is in very high demand. Listen to this. A new study looked at the top jobs people are Googling right now. Amazon is the clear winner in the U.S. and worldwide. It looked at 6 months worth of searches involving specific keywords.
Okay.
You go to Google, you want a job? The most in-demand jobs, according to America's Googling habits, are Amazon jobs. Almost 7 times more searches than second place.
Because you know you're going to have work, because everybody's so lazy, we just have things sent to our house now.
Or the economy sucks and you need a second gig.
That too.
Number two. So Amazon jobs is number one. Number two, virtual assistant jobs. So personal assistants who work from home.
Okay.
Number three, flight attendant jobs. I couldn't imagine why anybody would want to be a flight attendant.
I mean, if you like to travel, like you get to see the country, you get to see the world.
But just dealing with a-hole passengers.
Like you. You've had a flight attendant yell at you before.
I did. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to open my little mini bottle of Makers that I brought onto the...
You're not supposed to open it. You're not supposed to bring it on.
No, you can bring it on. You just can't open it. It's illegal for you to open, like, you know, the 3-ounce bottles, the minis,
yeah,
right?
Little minis.
You can bring them on, but you can't open it.
Although
illegal.
You couldn't even bring them on.
No. You can get them through security.
I've been drinking them all before I got on the flight.
So what are we at? Amazon jobs number one, virtual assistant jobs two, flight attendant three, data analyst jobs four, receptionist jobs five. It seems like, again, some of these are like Bidenomics, Biden economy. I got to get a second or third gig. Maybe I should try Amazon because they're looking for people.
I want to be NIL recipient, like these college kids that get all this money and, you know, endorsements because they play a sport. Now, I don't play a sport, but I'll enroll in college if it means I can get a free car or something. I want to be NIL recipient. Real quick, Nige, happy 76th birthday to Steven Tyler of Aerosmith.
Man.
He's 76. Let's take a trip down memory lane when he sang the national anthem at the Indy 500.
Mario Andretti just wanted to wrap his fat fingers around Steven Tyler's scrawny neck.
I think AJ Foyt is being held back.
Yeah.
Like somebody was grabbing his arms.
That's what I meant, AJ Foyt. Yeah, that picture, because it cut straight to AJ Foyt, right?
Right.
It cut straight to AJ Foyt as soon as he was doing his little.
That was pretty good, actually.
Hey, thank you very much.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hammer and Nigel.
You believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
Yeah, I had Lindsay make a Total Wine delivery order for me for the GOP governor debate tonight. Some Miller Lite in there, some Jim Beam, there's some Fireball. It's going to take a lot to get through it. Mike Braun, Brad Chambers, Suzanne Crouch, Eric Doden all on the debate stage tonight. They all want to be your next governor of the great state of Indiana. Of course, a couple of candidates that won't be on that platform.
The Indiana states of this tournament, if you will, the folks that did not make the big tournament that are playing in the NIT, Jamie Rittenour and Curtis Hill, not part of the CBS 4 7 o'clock debate tonight.
Even though they had plenty of signatures, they met the legal threshold to run for governor of the state of Indiana. But because of, I don't know, some poll that Fox News came up with, they don't have enough polling, I guess is what they're saying.
So CBS 4, they were the ones that said, hey, we're going to use this poll to dictate who makes the stage. Yeah. And Curtis Hill and Jamie Rittenour are not part of the debate. Now, I believe Rittenour is coming in tomorrow to debate Rob Kendall. For some reason.
I don't think they're debating each other. I think they're both like going to pretend like they're on the debate stage together or something like that. I'm not quite sure.
So it's a little role-playing going on tomorrow.
It's
going
to be, I think it's appointment listening tomorrow.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm in.
I hope Curtis Hill decides to come. He originally turned him down, but do you think it's curious that both the African-American candidates for governor of Indiana aren't allowed to debate? I mean, Fox, Fox 59, CBS 4, that's whatever their rules are is whatever their rules are. But there's really been no pushback from the RNC. Where's the NAACP? As Rob Kendall had a great question today. Where's the NAACP on this?
Right.
You know?
So the question then could be flipped around, though. Why are these the two lowest polling gubernatorial candidates? Is the state of Indiana racist? You know, that the question could be flipped around. So all I'm saying is, what do we got here? Four people on the stage tonight. Do you really want six up there?
No, I want to hear what Curtis Hill has to say. I want to hear what Jamie Rittenour has to say. I think Curtis Hill is probably, in terms of debate style, the most talented one up there. I don't know what new things we're going to learn. Do you know who you're going to vote for in this crowd yet?
I think I do.
You do?
Here's what I want to see tonight. I think with this being the first major televised debate, okay, on CBS 4 in, you know, Marion County, Indianapolis, and all the donut counties to get that channel, I think some of these candidates have been holding back going at Mike Braun. So I think you're going to see Chambers, Doden, and Crouch all kind of team up and go at the front runner, which is Mike Braun. And if that happens, how is Mike Braun going to clap back? I think tonight's the night. I think you've been seeing some sandbagging so far.
Interesting.
They've been waiting for the televised audience to bring the heat. So if people like us think this is going to happen, I know Mike Braun probably thinks it's going to happen.
I'm sure it'll be brought up that Mike Braun didn't show up to vote for the omnibus spending bill.
Right. Right.
I didn't even bother to show up. Look, we've had Mike Bryan on the show several times. We had Suzanne Crouch on. I heard Eric Doden on. That's the first time I've heard anything about Doden on Rob Kendall's Kendall and Casey show. I've certainly heard Curtis Hill. We've had Curtis Hill on. Jamie, I think these are all interesting candidates. I don't know much about, you know, Brad Chambers.
Right.
Other than these people are spending a lot of money.
They are. They Ooh. All have a lot of money. They're yeah. Patrick Ewing. Remember back when Patrick Ewing was asked about the amount of money he may or may not spend in the Adult Gentlemen's Club when he was in the NBA? We spend a lot of money, but we make a lot of money. Okay, there you go. But I'm looking forward to it. We'll have highlights for you tomorrow. In his latest interview, Tucker Carlson has Tulsi Gabbard as his guest, and he introduces Tulsi as somebody that could be a vice presidential choice for Donald Trump. Do you buy that, Nige?
No, I don't think I buy that. She is pretty controversial. She got kicked. I mean, look, she was a Bernie supporter at one point. She introduced she was fully behind Bernie Sanders. And I don't know other in terms of foreign policy, I'm all in on her. I like her foreign policy. I like the fact that she wants to stay out of foreign wars and nation building and all that stuff. And so does Donald Trump. I mean, she's a name for sure. Everybody recognizes. But what do we always say on the show? And when Rob says it and Tony says it, I think Donald Trump has said it. What's my vice presidential pick matter? Right. What does a VP pick matter when running?
You just need somebody there in case something happens, right? So heaven forbid something happens to whoever wins the presidency. You want somebody there that's going to continue sure. your agenda. And I don't know if Tulsi Gabbard would be that person or not. And really, they didn't even talk about that in the interview. Tucker introduced her that way, and that was kind of it. The interesting part is when Tulsi was talking about why she left the Democrat Party.
The Democrat elite across Washington are intentionally politicizing and weaponizing the tools of our own government and their friends in big tech and social media and their friends in the mainstream media to take away our freedoms, to take away our right to free speech, to violate our privacy and our civil liberties. They have become the party of war. In every respect, unfortunately, the Democrat Party has become a party that is undermining the very fabric of our country, of our freedom, of our Constitution and the rule of law, which is why ultimately I left the Democratic Party, and it's why I am sounding the alarm bells as we head into this very critical election year about really what's at stake.
That was Tulsi Gabbard on with Tucker Carlson.
I mean, you remember during the Democratic presidential debate in 2019, she accused Trump of propping up Al-Qaeda. I got the quote right here. Quote, this current president is continuing to betray us. We were supposed to be going after Al-Qaeda, but over years now, not only have we not gone after Al-Qaeda, our president is supporting Al-Qaeda. So that's why I think just kind of stuff like that in her past, those quotes in her
past. But you know what? Politics makes strange bedfellows. The current vice president accused the president of being a segregationist and a racist.
Yeah, and believed his sexual assault accuser.
Right. Going back to the vice presidential conversation here, Bloomberg had an article, I think this was last week, about how their inside sources at Bloomberg say that Donald Trump has told Vivek Ramaswamy he will not be the vice president, but will have a spot on his cabinet somewhere if he wins. And according to Bloomberg, that cabinet position would be DHS secretary taking over for Mayorkas. So could you see Vivek Ramaswamy being in charge of DHS, maybe handling some stuff happening at the border?
I can imagine him being in his cabinet. I just don't know where. I don't know where it would make sense. I don't know what kind of qualifications you have to be DHS secretary. Apparently with Mayorkas, while you were gone, we played Mayorkas in 2019, 2020. Maybe it's 2021. I'm sorry. Mayorkas bragging about how Joe Biden signed all those executive orders erasing Donald Trump's policy. So I don't know what kind of qualifications it takes to have that position. But who were the others you mentioned?
So this Bloomberg report, again, take this for what you will. It's Bloomberg based out of New York. Their sources are saying that a couple names being kicked around for the attorney general's position.
Oh, the AG.
If Donald Trump wins, would be Mike Lee out of Utah or Ted Cruz. And chief of staff. Now, you might want to put your drink down here, Nige, because according to Bloomberg, one of the names being kicked around for Trump's chief of staff, Kevin McCarthy.
Really? The former House Speaker that was ousted?
Correct.
By Matt Gaetz and the good old boys at the Freedom Caucus?
Correct.
Wow.
So I don't know if that's true or not, but that is what is being reported by the fine folks at Bloomberg.
I think we're looking ahead of ourselves an awful lot here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
An awful lot. I mean, there's a lot of mail-in ballots that are going to be coming in that could change things.
Hammer and Nigel presents. Is.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yeah. Is this anything?
All right, let's rock and roll.
Yeah, let's do it. How do we play Is This Anything?
I'm going to run some stories by you. You tell us if the stories are anything or not.
Alrighty.
Is this anything? A SWAT team in St. Louis raided a family's home after Apple's Find My feature said AirPods linked to a carjacking were inside. Now, the carjackers must have tossed them as they drove by, and this family had their home invaded by a SWAT team because these earpods were there. They're now suing. Here they are breaking it down.
So you're investing in a violent crime? Man, I drive trucks. Man, I don't know anything about a violent crime. Nothing that was involved in this crime was ever found inside of my house. Once I made it home that morning, I didn't leave again until 1 o'clock. My children don't even want to walk up and down the street because we were humiliated.
Yeah, that's something. That's unfortunate. Mistakes are going to be made. I'm not going to try to twist myself into a pretzel defending the SWAT team as much as we back law enforcement. But here's the thing: the Find My app, you know, that we're on. These guys threw the AirPods. I'm reading this article. They threw the AirPods in the street. So it wasn't like these AirPods were on the porch or on the driveway. They were just on the street, and the SWAT team came in and busted down these people's doors. There's little kids with no warning, guns drawn, and
like Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, exactly.
But the SWAT team comes swinging through the windows of the Griswold house.
I would say somebody probably needs to be held accountable for that, for sure. Absolutely. I don't know if it warrants millions of dollars and because they're filing a lawsuit or something like that, but I'd be pissed if that were me.
What do you find yourself losing more? EarPods, keys, wallet, phone? Maybe remote control. I don't know.
The twisty tie on the loaf of bread.
Oh, that's a good answer. Good answer.
I take that off the loaf of bread. I'm never finding it again. I just have to twist it.
You're like a magician. It's in your hand. You close it, then it's gone.
Every time I open a loaf of bread or make a toast for the kids or something, I can't find a twisty tie.
Allison, what's the one thing that you lose all the time?
Definitely my phone around the house, because I'll always put it in some weird spot and then I can't find it, and I put it on vibrate. So it's not like I can call myself.
Also, Amazon Fire Sticks, the remotes from Amazon Fire Stick.
Because they're kind of skinnier compared to some of the other ones.
Oh, I've spent hundreds of dollars ordering replacements for those.
I already know what my wife is yelling at the radio. Keys, you dummy. I lose my keys at home. I lose my keys here. Nigel's had to help me find my damn keys here, and half the time they're in my door. Is this anything? A new type of guilt just dropped on social media. It's called sunshine guilt.
Sunshine guilt.
Okay. It's basically when you feel guilty that you don't want to spend time outside on a beautiful sunny day. Here's somebody breaking it down.
I am experiencing sunshine guilt right now. It is an abnormally beautiful day outside, but I'm tired. So now I feel this pressure to go outside and go for a walk and enjoy the weather while it lasts. I can't enjoy myself indoors now because the whole time I'm thinking that I should be outside. So basically my day is ruined.
This is something. It's something I've experienced. I didn't know it had a name, sunshine guilt.
Yes.
But there's been Saturdays where I've had the house to myself and it's beautiful outside, and all I kind of want to do is just lay on the couch and watch TV. And I feel ashamed because it's such a beautiful afternoon. I should be out in the yard. I should be out taking a walk. I don't know. I should be doing something, but kind of, you know, it's been a long week. I don't care if the sun's out. I'm going to sit on the couch and watch reruns of Seinfeld.
I've talked myself into believing that if you open the windows, it's the same thing.
That's a good idea.
I don't know if I'm right or not, but I've talked myself into it.
That would soften the guilt for me.
Right.
Okay. I'll remember that.
It's not a lie if you believe it.
A la George Costanza. Thank you.
Is this anything? The iconic floating door from the movie Titanic, where Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio were floating on in the Atlantic, where there was totally room for him.
Totally room for him to get on that door.
But her big ass wouldn't let him up there. It's now the highest selling auction item for a Hollywood prop, followed by Harrison Ford's whip from Indiana Jones and the Kingpin bowling ball that had the rose in it from Bill Murray and Kingpin. The Titanic floating door sold for $718,000 at an auction. Is this anything?
I thought it was going to be more. I mean, I guess it's something. I would have thought it would have been in the seven-figure range. It's just such a popular, iconic movie ingrained in our culture. Especially that scene was very famous. The scene's become controversial. Because, yeah, plenty of room for Leo's... What was his thing on the door?
The scene where he's floating on the door, there's totally room for him to get up there. Like, yeah. If you do a chalk outline of the bodies, like, you can see multiple ways, but Queenie over there wasn't about to make any room for him.
I love how Bill Murray's rose bowling ball in Kingpin sold for $350,000. That's awesome.
That is awesome. Somebody had that at our bowling event. Now, it wasn't that specific one, but a model that looked like that. Remember, somebody had the big Earn McCracken bowling ball at our bowling event.
Jack Nicholson's axe from The Shining, only $125,000. I don't know. So you're telling me the bowling ball from Kingpin went for more than Jack Nicholson's axe in The Shining? What do you think there? I mean, I know Kingpin's one of your favorite comedies, but. That's another iconic scene where he's busted. Here's Johnny busted through the bathroom door.
And not only did it sell for more, it like more than doubled it.
Yes.
Like that bowling ball was $350,000. The axe sold for $125,000. Is there a piece of movie memorabilia? If money was not an object, you would say I'm all in on.
Maybe something from Star Wars. Maybe something from, like, the Big Lebowski. Maybe Lebowski's original sweater
that
he was wearing.
And I got you.
Original sunglasses.
Right.
And his jellies that he wore. Remember, he didn't wear sandals. You know what jellies are? Allison, do you know what I'm saying when I say the jellies? Like
jelly sandals?
Yes.
Yeah.
if I could, like, get that and, like, frame that, yeah. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Allison, anything come to mind for you?
Yeah, the Chris Farley's small jacket, the fat boy in a little coat.
Okay.
From Tommy Boy.
That would be cool.
Because everyone knows what that reference is.
Right.
That guy,
you can have it hanging
coat
in the front of your house, and it's half ripped.
Right? What would you do with it if you had it? Like, would you just hang it up somewhere?
Yeah, I'd 100% hang it up in, like, the front room. It's like, as soon as you walk in the door, it's there.
Because that's a great conversation starter, 100%. Right? All right. Meltdown Madness coming up next. This is the Hammer and Nigel Show.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
A lot of people waiting for that big game on Friday, Purdue in the Sweet 16 taking on Gonzaga. But a lot of people are hanging on pins and needles for Meltdown Madness because a trip to the finals is on the line today. Now, before we get to today's matchup, we want to thank Window Nation for sponsoring Meltdown Madness. And let's recap yesterday's matchup. Trip to the national championship game. tomorrow, 4:35, the number 6 seed took on the number 10 seed. The number 6 seed was Oklahoma State's head coach Mike Gundy responding to a hit piece in the local newspaper in Stillwater, Oklahoma, about one of his football players.
If your child goes down the street and somebody makes fun of him because he dropped a pass in a pickup game or says he's fat, that's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage, attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. That's all I got to say. It makes me want to puke.
I kind of hope Mike Braun ends the debate that way tonight. That's all I got to say. It makes me want to puke. It just walks off.
I kind of in that clip where it says he's fat. I was kind of like that more than I'm a man, I'm 40.
It's a great, great sound bite. But it's up against a buzzsaw right now. A low seed making noise in this tournament. The same way the fat guy in NC State are doing in the real March Madness tournament. The number 10 seed also features a fat guy. Former Dodgers manager Tommy Lasorda. This was his response when somebody questioned whether or not he told one of his pitchers to hit another player.
I have never, ever, since I've managed, ever told a pitcher to throw at anybody, nor will I ever. And if I ever did, I certainly wouldn't make him throw at a 130 hitter like a Bavacqua who could hit water if he fell out of a boat. And I guarantee you this, when I pitched and I was going to pitch against a team that had guys on it like Bavacqua, I sent a limousine to get the to make sure he was in the motherfucking lineup.
So by a final score of 57% to 43%, moving on to the national championship game tomorrow, Tommy Lasorda.
Oh. When I pitched, and I was going to pitch against a team that had guys on it like Bavacqua, I sent a limousine to get the to make sure he was in the motherfucking lineup.
Incredible. I mean, just, and it's funny because the name Bavacqua in and of itself makes you laugh.
Right. And the way that he says it the second time,
yeah.
Bavacqua. All right. So Tommy Lasorda will be in the national championship game tomorrow.
Wow. 10 seed.
Who will he take on? Today's matchup, the number 5 seed in our tournament, radio legend Casey Kasem, melting down, very upset that his producer wanted him on his world-famous Top 40 Countdown show to have a sad dead dog dedication coming out of an up-tempo record.
He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of... Let's go start again. From coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please. See, when you come out of those up-tempo damn numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions, and then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but... Damn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it. Is Don on the phone? Okay, I want a damn concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a f***ing up-tempo record every time I do a damn death dedication. Now, make it, and I also want to know what happened to the pictures I was supposed to see this week. It's a last damn time. I want somebody to use his f***ing brain to not come out of a damn record that is that's up-tempo, and I got to talk about a f***ing dog dying.
It's a slow build there.
Right.
Just like Lasorda.
Starts very calm.
Very nice.
Can't do it. Can't talk about something out of an up-tempo record. Next thing you know, we're looking for Don. We don't have pictures. Hell's breaking loose. So that is the number 5 seed taking on the number 1 seed in this tournament. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Knight.
I mean, if you're not going to recover Greg Graham, if you're just going to let him drive by you, if the rest of you are going to let him catch the ball outside the 3-second lane and drive all the way in here without one guy challenging him, then I'm leaving and you f***ing guys will run till you can't even suffer. Now, I'm tired of this shit. I'm sick and f***ing tired of an 8-10 record. I'm f***ing tired of losing to Purdue. I'm not here to f*** around this week. Now, you may be, but I'm not.
Boy, again,
that's a long way from, it did my job.
Again, quote. That's another way I'd like to see somebody in the debate tonight. I'm not here to bleep around this week. Now, you may be, but I'm not. Thank you, Mr. Chambers. All right, so voting is live now on Twitter. Winner goes to the national championship game tomorrow to take on Tommy Lasorda. Casey Kasem against Bob Knight. It's pinned to the top of our Twitter, at Hammer and Nigel. So make sure you follow us. Make sure you vote. This is going to be fun tomorrow. I can't wait for all the pageantry, the pomp and circumstance, but we've got one more team that needs to punch their ticket. Casey Kasem or Bob Knight. Vote right now. Meltdown Madness presented by Window Nation. Allison, I need some mood music, please.
You got to know when to hold up. Know when to
Kenny.
Hold up.
Know when Major to League Baseball away. Is looking into allegations that Shohei Ohtani and his translator may have been doing some big-time gambling.
I was wondering where you're going with that mood music.
So when this gambling scandal broke, Shohei Ohtani's translator, which is also like one of his best friends.
Explain who Shohei Ohtani is. He's the biggest name in baseball, right?
Got
a record-breaking contract from the Dodgers.
MVP, he can pitch, he can hit. You know, just signed a free agent deal with the Dodgers. Ridiculous amount of talent. He is the best baseball player on the planet. But his translator, his buddy, is in trouble. He's $4.5 million in the hole on gambling debts on sports.
Where do you get that kind of money? Interpreter. Boy, that pays really well.
Really, really well, apparently. And what's odd, Nige, is the state of California does not have legalized sports betting. So let's go down the timeline here. When this scandal broke, when we found out that somebody, wink, wink, wired $4.5 million to the account to help the translator dig out of debt, the translator first claims that he had a rich friend, his brother, air quote, that helped him cover the debt. And then in this bombshell response, Ohtani claimed that he's been the victim of massive theft, i.e. he did not cover these debts knowingly.
So what, did the interpreter have Ohtani's bank account number?
He might have, because he might do the transactions with payroll. But the thing is with Ohtani, a dude who just signed a contract of that magnitude, he's got more than one person, right? He's got financial aides. He's got bankers. He's got agents. He's got business partners. Yeah. He's got an interpreter. So either Ohtani is full of crap, or all those people we just mentioned are the most incompetent people in the world to not see $4.5 million just happen to go missing. Something's fishy here. And I'm telling you this because I know this for a fact. Again, sports betting is illegal in California. So this isn't some big app. This isn't, you know, Bet Rivers or FanDuel. This is some dude running it. Dudes like that don't give nobodies millions of dollars worth of credit. They don't give interpreters,
I see what you're saying,
$4.5 million worth of credit to go into debt on, unless they know they're bankrolled by somebody else. And that somebody else could be Shohei Ohtani.
Well, no, don't worry. Major League Baseball has launched an investigation.
Oh, I'm sure they're really going to get to the bottom of this. This is like the investigation the Alpha Betas did in Revenge of the Nerds about who tore apart the Lambda House. Stan Gable and Betty Childs and their fact-finding commission. There is no way they're going to be tough on the face of baseball right now. But this doesn't look good. So, again, either Ohtani's full of crap or he's surrounded by the most incompetent list of professionals I've ever seen in my life.
Or criminals, for that matter. Yeah.
Right. Pete Rose, he's got thoughts on this whole situation.
Well, back in the 70s and 80s, I wish I'd have had an interpreter. I'd be scot-free.
Quote, back in the 70s and 80s, I wish I would have had an interpreter. I would have gone scot-free. Can you play that one more time, Allison, Pete Rose?
Well, back in the 70s and 80s, I wish I'd have had an interpreter. I'd be scot-free.
That's amazing. Wow.
So either put Pete Rose in the freaking Hall of Fame.
Here, here.
If you're going to let Ohtani off the hook, or suspend Ohtani. Come on now. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
So again, Nige,
yes.
I was kind of taken aback
yeah.
at how good your Steven Tyler impression was from earlier in the show.
Well, it certainly wasn't on purpose. I've never even done or attempted a Steven Tyler impression.
Just greatness just came right out of that thing.
This is what you were talking about earlier. We played him singing the national anthem at the Indy 500, right?
It's Steven Tyler's birthday today.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
And then as a result, we played his controversial rendition of the Star Spangled Banner at the Indy 500, where he did it in his own unusual way, and it looked like AJ Foyt wanted to pick him up by the throat and slam him through a table like the Undertaker used to do. So Allison's put together a little montage here of,
well, we've been some of these tweeted about it as well. People
yeah.
have been asking for it, my Steven Tyler impression, and I'm like, I'm not going to try that again. I can't recreate greatness like that.
But we want to give the people what they want.
Okay.
So Allison put together a little mashup, a little montage of
oh,
the
no.
real Steven Tyler with Big Nige. That's pretty good. That's pretty darn
See,
good.
I can't recreate that because I know some people in the chat were like, do that again. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it again because I don't want to ruin it.
Right. You don't want to have a bad sequel. You want to
yes.
have just the amazing oh. first run. Can I get that one more time, please, Miss Allison? Well played. Well
you.
Done, Big Nudge.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think I like your Steven Tyler just a little better than Trump. I love your out of control, you know, loose cannon Trump impression, especially when he's rattling off all the things that allegedly cured you from COVID.
Ivermectin, remdesivir, dexamethasone,
hydroxychloroquine.
Hydroxychloroquine. You shoot a shot of bleach in your ass.
So good. According to a new study, 73% of millennial parents. Now, I don't fall into this category. I'm a Gen Xer. 73% of millennial parents think they're doing a better job with their kids than their own parents did with them.
Really?
So even though we're in the Gen X category here, Nige, do you think you're doing a better job with your kids than your parents did with you?
No, I learned from my parents. I think they did a pretty good job raising me, and so I try to take what I learned from them, and I think we do things a little bit differently. See, millennials are generally between the ages of 81 and 96, so my wife was born in 81. And
like, the years, 81
yeah,
through 90.
Yeah,
I thought you meant the age.
No, 1981 and 1996.
Good Lord, they're still pumping out kids.
So between the ages of 28 and 41, and so what are we doing differently today than back.
So, according to the poll, here are the top four parenting strategies that millennials are using more than their parents did with them. Gentle parenting. Guiding your children through the decision-making process.
Yeah, there was no gentle parenting on this end.
There's not a lot that happens now in the Hammer House either. Where we get advice. 24% say they've gotten parenting advice from social media.
Oh, boy. Oh, no.
Being open about mental health. And number four, being present with your kids.
Oh, BS. Please. I see plenty of millennials with kids with their noses in their phones at the local parks.
Right.
Not present with their kids.
You're on Twitter trying to figure out how to be a better parent, ignoring your kid when he's literally there. Do not go anywhere. We had a wild 5 o'clock hour. Come on back.
Hammer and Nigel.
You believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
Well, NBC, they're reportedly plans to drop former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel as a paid contributor following an on-air revolt from their hosts. Hey, you're telling me these NBC executives, these bigwigs over there, are letting the inmates run the asylum and tell them who they can and can't hire? RNC, I mean, first of all, Ronna McDaniel wasn't like a revered Republican. She ran the RNC. Right. But she wasn't exactly nobody thought she was like the second coming of Donald Trump.
Right. She doesn't like Donald Trump. And truth be told, she wasn't real good at her job. So I'm surprised that these folks at NBC wouldn't be like, OK, let's get this half-assed Republican in there so that way we can say that we're balanced and we can all hate Trump together, because that's what they're going to do.
And by the way, there is precedent for hiring an RNC chairman. They did it back, I believe, from 2009 to 2011. Michael Steele, who was the RNC chairman during that time. Now he's a contributor, but he's a never Trump variety.
Right.
Of a Republican that's a contributor for NBC. So he's okay.
And again, it wasn't like Jim Jordan or Comer or Matt Gaetz had signed with NBC. This was Ronna McDaniel. She probably has a lot of the same beliefs that Morning Joe and Rachel Maddow have when it comes to Donald Trump. And that's really what the coverage is about right now. And, oh, by the way, they hired Jen Psaki in the past.
Oh, there's that. Yeah, she got on stage. She was the former spokesperson for Joe Biden that lied to us every day.
Right.
She was good at her job, though.
If you can't really remember who she was, here to remind you is Donald Trump.
The press secretary with the extremely red hair.
That's who Jen Psaki is.
I forgot, yes.
And she's trying to go on social media. She's going on the air now. Because her feelings are hurt. She's totally butt hurt that people are saying, wait a minute, you guys are going to run out Ronna McDaniel, but you're going to keep Jen Psaki? Both of them were inside political parties, but you're keeping one and blowing out the other one? Here is Jen Psaki crying on the air saying those comparisons are unfair.
You may have seen some news over the last few days about the hiring of former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel as an NBC News contributor. And some, mainly in the right-wing ecosystem, have made the comparison to others who have come from government or politics into the media, including me. And that is a comparison I felt like I had to address. I got into public service for the same reason that many people do, to serve the American people. I worked on my first political campaign when I was just 24 years old. When I was 28, I packed my bags, I moved to Chicago to work for Barack Obama. He wanted to make the country a better place, and I wanted to help him. And a few years later, I would do the same thing for President Biden when I went to work for him in the White House. But here's the thing. That kind of experience only matters and only has value to viewers, all of you, if it is paired with honesty and with good faith. Those qualities are especially important right now, at a time when our institutions are under attack and when our democracy is in danger.
There it is.
And our democracy is in danger because of the lies that people like Ronna McDaniel have pushed on this country.
And again, they're never specific when they say democracy is in danger, other than to say Trump is a threat to democracy, trying to take him off the ballot in certain states, bankrupting Donald Trump, throwing him in jail. The threat to democracy is you, and the daily narrative that your network perpetuates against Donald Trump and his supporters.
And for her to say, well, I'm honest and she's not.
Yeah.
Tell me more about Russian collusion, Jen. Tell me a little bit more about that. Talk to me about the Hunter Biden laptop that you denied this whole time. And you knew damn well it was dirty because your boss was the big guy and he was getting 10%. So stop with the lectures. It's so unbelievably crooked. For those who say Fox News, it's propaganda for the right. look me in the eye and tell me that NBC isn't propaganda for the left after hearing that statement from Jen Psaki.
Then let's go over to ABC News, shall we? Where Donna Brazile, former co-chair of the DNC, is a regular panelist. What was she accused of, by the way, to get her removed? Oh, she gave Hillary Clinton the debate questions, and now she's a panelist for ABC. No bias, right?
None.
I don't see any bias right there.
No.
Same for Stephanopoulos, or Stephalopoulos, former campaign staffer for Clinton.
Professional butt sniffer.
Yeah, right. That's right. I mean, I think I mentioned yesterday that Simone Sanders, who was once a spokesman for maybe Biden, definitely for Kamala Harris.
And she worked with Bernie, too.
Yeah, Bernie. That's right. That's right. Bernie. She has a show on MSNBC.
So basically, they don't want any different opinion. Like, at least on The Five, which airs on Fox, you've got a legitimate Democrat there that walks into the lion's den and fights back against people.
Oh, man. Did you watch it last night? After we talked to Jesse Waters, and I was telling him how, like, sometimes I don't know whether to cheer or feel sorry, cheer against or feel sorry for Jessica Tarlov. She's not the quote-unquote token liberal. She is a true liberal. She says what she thinks on that panel. And I don't know, they were arguing about Donald Trump's civil fraud case, and Jesse Waters goes, what would you know about real estate? You're a renter. And that pissed her off. And we were just talking about that with him on the show earlier that day. Like, what do you know about real estate? You're a renter. And she wouldn't let it go. She brought that comment up for the rest. If you watched The Five yesterday, go back. It was hilarious.
The update on the bridge collapse in Maryland. Right now, it still looks like 6 people are missing. 2 have been rescued from the water after a boat, this little ship containing a lot of cargo, crashed into the bridge after it lost power, like around 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. It hit the big, you know, support system of the bridge in the water.
And it just looked like a bunch of toothpicks collapsing in
right.
on itself. I mean, this is a big, giant, mile-long bridge that's been around forever, the Key Bridge.
And this river, it's deep. It's around 50 feet there because it feeds into bigger bodies of water.
It's cold.
Joe Biden spoke a little bit earlier today about this tragedy and says that he can understand what it's like going across that bridge because even though there's no train tracks, he used to take the train across it.
At about 1:30, container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times commuting from the state of Delaware either on a train or by car.
By train or by car, Nige. And that's the damnedest thing because there's no train tracks on that bridge.
Woo! I don't know. I don't know, man. I mean, I could barely understand what he was saying as it is. You know, and there's the trains and the train tracks of Delaware to commute. Wow.
So in honor of Joe Biden saying that he would take the train across that bridge, which never existed, here's a little tribute song from the fine folks at Family Guy.
Train on the water, boat on the track. Train on the water, boat on the track.
Train on the water, boat on the tracks. He's just up here making stuff up at this point. Like, I don't know if he's a habitual liar or if he's just that senile.
Yeah, I was on the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and then I walked straight to the Himalayas with President Xi.
You can't prove that. Nige, if you're looking for a reason to drink tonight, happy 58th birthday to actor Michael Imperioli.
Oh, sure.
He was in Goodfellas. He was ultimately
Spider.
Waxed by...
he was Spider.
Yeah, Joe Pesci. And best known as Christopher Moltisanti in The Sopranos. He's 58 today. Now, his love interest on The Sopranos, a young lady by the name of Drea De Matteo, mm-hmm. She is trending in the news because she came out and said she's made more money doing OnlyFans in 1 month than she made during the entire time she was on The Sopranos.
Shut up.
1 month compared to, what
Whoa.
Was it, 5-6 years that she was on The Sopranos as Christopher's love interest? So here's my question to the brain trust in this room. And Allison, I'm going to start with you. If you knew you could make 5 years worth of salary in just 1 month of doing OnlyFans, doing God knows what to make perverts happy, would you do it?
I don't think I would.
No?
I don't think I would. I mean, really good for
there
her.
There was a moment of hesitancy there.
I was really thinking about it. I want to make sure I'm being honest. I don't think
because
I could.
Just a couple of months, hell, you might be able to put a retirement plan together.
Well, I do make radio money, so 5 years isn't probably
still,
that much.
But, yeah. You could either work till you're 70 or make perverts happy for the next year. What's it going to be?
It's the word perverts that's getting me.
Pervert? Nige?
No. Nobody wants to see my hairy butt on OnlyFans.
But let's say
anyway.
That they did. Just for, play along with me here. Yeah. Let's say you could make your salary right now, and I kind of know what it is, 5 years worth of that in 1 month. Would you do it?
No. No. I think I'm good.
I'm all in.
I'm all in.
Like, if I could make 5 years in 1 month, again, 2-3 months down the road, I'm ready to retire just from showing perverts my butthole.
You're getting paid for it now. Yeah.
I have no problem whatsoever. If my kids get embarrassed, that's fine. I'll move to Florida where they don't have to deal with me anymore. But if I can make that type of money in 1 month just by making perverts like Matt Bear happy, hey, game on, man. Game on.
Are you really okay with me?
Are you okay?
Everything's gonna be okay.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
I'm pretty f***ing far from okay.
Are you okay with this? On the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Oh, yeah!
Hammer, a Brooklyn man nicknamed Iron Man, is pressing people's clothes at a nearby bar for free to, quote, help out the community. Here is James talking about what started this new volunteer work.
There was a clothing swap in Greenpoint. I went there and, you know, almost as if laid in my path by the great God of Providence, someone had given away a steam iron, which is, you know, and this is a Rowenta. This is like the finest steam iron you can get. This is German engineering.
Are you okay with this?
No. Let me tell you why. Because
I don't get it.
What's going to happen when you've got a big job interview, right? This is a make or break job that you're getting ready to go interview for. And you tell your lovely wife, Lindsay, Nige, I'm going to go down to the bar and Jim's going to press my clothes. She's going to be like, who the hell is Jim? It's okay. He's cool. Did you hear that guy? He sounded half three sheets to the wind right there. You don't want him.
He did.
Ironing any part of your clothing.
How is this helping the community, by the way?
Right. There's not a big need for people who don't have iron clothes. Like, I'm sure the homeless community in Brooklyn is okay. Like, hey, could you pass out some sandwiches or maybe
sure,
give
right.
us some blankets?
I need some socks. I need some toiletries. I need some shelter. I mean, I would say down way, 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 way down on the list of things that that people who are impoverished need are ironed clothes.
Right. It reminds me of the charity that Zoolander had, the Derek Zoolander Foundation for Kids Who Don't Read So Good. Like, sure, you're helping, but is there really a need for all of that? And great moments in iron history. I believe it's urban legend because he's denied it, although others have said that it's fact. Major League Baseball Hall of Famer John Smoltz allegedly once burned himself with an iron because he was trying to press a shirt that he was wearing. He's denied it, but other folks have said that that really happened. He burned himself because he was ironing a shirt that he was wearing.
Great moments in iron history. Oh, the movie Mr. Mom, Michael Keaton cooking grilled cheese with an iron for his kids.
That's right. Great reference.
A socialist mayor of Toronto is set to implement a, quote, rain tax on residents. You're going to be charged for however much rain falls onto your property. The proposal currently states that properties with More hard surfaces would incur higher taxes as these surfaces would contribute to runoff that can overwhelm the city's sewer system during storms. Are you okay with this?
I'm not okay with this.
Unbelievable.
But you know what's frightening? There's some lunatic probably on the city county council here in Indy going, well, hey, that's a great idea. That lunatic Jesse Brown or Frank Mascari or Vop Osley, they hear this idea, and instead of saying, what the hell is wrong with you people, they rush to a computer to draft up legislation yeah. to make this happen. Because there's nothing socialists and Democrats hate more than successful people. They hate rich people, unless they become one of them, and then it's rules for thee, not for me.
Sure.
But the idea of taxing somebody with a big house because when it rains, more stuff comes off their house and floods the sewage system. I'm telling you, you can't laugh at this kind of crap because your city county council, they're probably thinking to themselves, well, we're going to bring this up.
Al Gore would probably pay $300,000 a month extra in taxes if that were the case.
Right.
His house is huge. Young people in China are refusing to dress up for work and wearing pajama bottoms to the office instead. Are you okay with this?
I'm okay with this because, for once, the United States has beat China in something. I see the clothes that my kids have worn to high school for the last couple of years, and I'm telling you, we are well ahead of the curve of China. These kids that I see coming in and out, they wear pajama pants, they wear flip-flops, sandals with socks. It looks like they just rolled out of bed and went to school. Now, I get times change, but when I was in high school, man, it was like a fashion show for a while. You had to have your hair on point. You caked yourself in cologne. You had the gold chain. You had the IOU sweatshirt with the Bugle Boy jeans and the new pair of J's. That was the 1994 starter kit right there.
Bugle Boy. Wow.
And now these kids are rolling out of the rack, hairs all over the place. It looks like everybody's auditioning for a Nirvana cover band going into high school now.
Real quick, some mood music, please, Allison. Pizza Hut is running a $12 pizza promotion for the big eclipse next month and calling it Total Eclipse of the Hut. Are you okay? Okay with this?
I love it. I'm a sucker for some good parody. I'm a sucker for some good alliteration. And a $12 large pizza, up to 10 toppings if you want, for $12.
Wow.
Total Eclipse of the Hut. I love it. Like, that's something that I would do if I were part of the Pizza Hut marketing team. That's fantastic. And this brings us to great moments in Total Eclipse of the Heart history, the Dan Band doing their version of that classic hit in the movie Old School.
Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all our years have gone by. Every now and then I get a little bit terrified to see the f- look in your eyes. Every now and then I pull a tongue.
Come on, bring it home. Watch this movie now.
Great moments and Total Eclipse of the Heart history.
Buckle up. Anything can happen here.
Oh, hell yeah. Let it ride. Let it ride. Yeah.
Hammer and Nigel present Caller Roulette.
Sometimes we do this and it works out. Other times we get dragged into the office of our boss, David Wood. We'll see what happens here. It's Caller Roulette. We don't screen the calls. All we have is a name. I have no idea what these people want to talk about on the other side of this phone line, Nige.
Brilliant.
Do we want to find out?
I guess.
Again, keep it clean. Keep it short. Let's see what happens. E. Buzz, welcome to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Boy.
What do you want to talk about?
If money is no object, I want that gray ghost that Nicolas Cage drove in that movie where they were stealing
the motorcycle?
Cars.
Ghost Rider?
When they were stealing the cars.
Oh, gone in 60 seconds.
Yes, that's silver Mustang.
That
what
piece of
meat.
We were talking earlier about memorabilia, like from movie memorabilia, how much we'd pay
Absolutely.
For it at auction. All right. I hear you.
Sally, you are next up. What do you want to talk about, Sally?
Hi, gentlemen. I just wanted to tell you that when I was a freshman at IU, I did iron a dress while I was wearing it. I don't recommend it. I ended up with a second-degree burn on my chest, and it was a nightmare. So, children, do not try that at home.
Was there alcohol involved in this, Sally?
Hello. You haven't met me, but what do you think?
All right. Sally, thank you for that. Again, anything can happen here. Mark, welcome to the Hammer and Nigel show. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, guys. Hey, just love your show. The total eclipse of the heart moment there you had?
Yes.
You check out Hura Torpedo. Just Google that on YouTube or whatever. And that's an excellent total eclipse of the heart moment, man.
Hura Torpedo.
Hura Torpedo. Yep.
Right. Okay.
I like when people just call us to give us YouTube links.
Right. And it feels like there's something in the Urban Dictionary there that you'll look up. The next thing you know, your computer's infected, or it's going to be that one guy with the massive crank sitting on the bed or something. Robert, welcome to the Hammer and Nigel show. Robert, what are you going to talk about?
Hey, guys, real quick. Just wanted to say Biden sucks. Pete Buttigieg sucks. MAGA, let's go. Trump.
Woo-wee! Yeah!
Thank you, Robert. Almost got a Ric Flair out of you right there.
Hoo!
Woo! Love some Ric Flair. One of my favorite Twitter accounts, by the way, is this
Out of Context.
Out of Context Flair. Well, they'll just post random, you know, promos that Ric Flair has cut, and they'll use it in an out of context way. Fantastic. Along with Super 70 Sports, one of my favorite follows on Twitter. Jim, welcome to the Hammer and Nigel show. What do you want to talk about, Jim?
Oh, well, Hammer, this is directed at you, buddy. I drive a semi for a living, and you've heard the commercials for the Hammer, right?
Yes.
Every time I hear your name, it freaks me out just a little bit, man. But I love the show.
That guy doesn't like you guys, does he?
No, that's why I'm super careful out there. But every time I hear your name,
good.
Hammer, I get a little nervous.
I'm not trying to sue you. I'm not an ambulance chaser coming after you. I'm not doing that. But I will say, it's a little ridiculous that guy doesn't sponsor legal stuff on this show.
Right.
Right.
My last name really is Hammer. He's faking it. Come on. Welcome to the show. Let's go.
Yeah, nothing like a fake Hammer, huh?
Boy, anyway, my wife had a dollar for every time she's heard that. Larry, you are next up. Larry, welcome to the Hammer and Nigel show.
Hey, gentlemen, another truck driver here. I'd like to know why Tony Katz is on so much through WIBC. Nobody needs that much Tony Katz.
I think this is Tony Katz's wife, actually, on the phone right now.
Any way we can get a pastor on there, maybe, the first thing in the morning to start the day off right.
A pastor? Now, Tony...
Now, Tony's doing his thing, man. Tony does well.
He's a hustler. I mean, like in a good way. He hustles.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets after it. He's got, the Eat, Drink, Smoke podcast is on in like several different markets.
Right.
And his afternoon show, same. His midday show, I guess.
And because he's got all of these shows, that's why he makes the big bucks and lives in the mansion that he lives in. Oh, wait. Tom, you are next up. Welcome to the Hammer and Nigel show, Tom.
Hi, guys. Southside Tom here. I agree with all the previous callers before I get to my situation. So right on, guys. But two things here. Hi, Nigel. I'm going to speak to Hammer now.
Go ahead.
To the news department, it's Sherman Drive, not Sherman Avenue, please, guys. And the other thing, Hammer is a parent of a student at UND, how do you feel about Paul Cosero leaving? We've enjoyed many games. He's coached at Nixon Hall. He's a wonderful coach.
Oh, he's a good dude, man. He's a good dude, and IUPUI is lucky to get him as their new basketball coach. I think he's going to have a little success there. Now, the bar is pretty low at IUPUI. I think they lost like 20-plus games this year. It's been a rough little stretch, but they're hijacking UND's basketball coach, and he's had a lot of success at UND.
That's a strong word, isn't it? hijacking?
I mean, they're getting him to go there. Honestly, right now, I could handicap the line. If UND played IUPUI, UND would beat them.
Okay.
And UND's a lower level, and IUPUI, or IU Indianapolis, whatever they call themselves now.
Oh, yeah.
Division One, UND would boat race them. But they're getting the coach in there to do things right. So, yeah, hate to see him go. Mike, you are next up. Welcome to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I can't wait for Tales from the Track, number one. And number two, so every time that I hear the Biden administration, I've heard Glenn Beck call it the Biden regime. I don't know how many times.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the way they're running things, right?
I call it the Biden crime family.
Right.
I don't know what – I don't really listen to Glenn Beck. I heard the Chicks on the Right interview with him, which is something I'd recommend. But, yeah, I usually say the Biden crime family.
I got a few left here. Joe, welcome to the Hammer and Nigel Show. What do you want to talk about?
With all this development and science and technology, the real question is, why haven't we made cheese out of whale milk? They're mammals. I don't get it. We need to invest in that. Whale cheese, guys. Whale cheese.
Mike Pence used to sit in this chair, Nige. Right back here is where Mike Pence used to sit.
I'm going to have to type in whale cheese in Google. Whale cheese.
Brian, welcome to the Hammer and Nigel Show. Doing caller roulette. What do you want to talk about?
Good afternoon. I'm very intrigued by the Drea Mateo OnlyFans. I was wondering if you guys would have a link or a discount coupon on your website that I can check the beautiful thing out.
I don't think it's like going to Denny's where you can present a coupon. I don't think OnlyFans works that way.
Yeah, I think Adriana from Sopranos, man. I'd be kind of interested, though. I always thought she was hot.
Oh,
for
yeah.
Sure.
Like, I would almost pay money just for her to yell at me and say, Christopher, over and over again, like she used to do on the show. Let's go to John. John, welcome to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hey, guys. I like your show. As far as the rainwater tax up there in Canada, here in Indiana, they do have a stormwater fee. If you go on IN.gov.
Yeah.
IN.gov, it's all right there. Not a tax. It's a fee, not a tax.
That's how they get around it, right? No, we're not taxing you. We're putting a fee on. Got it.
A safety fee.
I got two left here. Let's go to Jake. Welcome to the Hammer and Nigel Show. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, Earth Rider, great Earth Rider. Thanks for the Geist Reservoir. And March Madness, baby. Boy up, Regina!
I'm glad we don't screen these calls out.
Was that first sound that emanated out of his mouth just a grunt? It sounded like Joe Biden.
I thought Biden was on the line. I did. I thought somebody was going to do a Biden impression. I got hairy legs.
I'm sure that means something to someone, what that guy just said. I just have no idea what it means.
Jack, you get the last word. Go ahead.
Hey, now be easy on Biden. I mean, I'm sure he took the wagon train on across there.
And this has been Caller Roulette. As always, a smashing success. Chris Hammer joins us next.
This is how we do it.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer over there with a special guest on the hotline.
He is a college student at the University of Indianapolis. He bowls on their team. He's a former intern of the Hammer and Nigel Show. My demon spawn, Chris Hammer, joins us.
Hey, Chris.
Chris, how are you?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Really well. Now, you got an invite to this really cool event that took place in Shelbyville earlier today where Jim Banks, Mike Braun, Todd Rokita, among others, were there. And Donald Trump Jr. was the keynote speaker. What was that event?
Oh, this event was, it was a really cool event. It was mainly a campaign event for Jim Banks, but there was a lot of cool people out there. Like you mentioned, Don Jr. was out there. Mike Braun was out there. Todd Rokita. They were all doing a big meet and greet at the end. There was a lot of people there. It was just a really awesome environment to go to.
What was the speech that Don Jr. gave? What did he talk about?
Don, he talked about a lot of different things. The main thing that he wanted to hammer in was I guess there's been people saying there's a news site saying that Republicans' main issue is Ukraine. And he was saying that anytime he's talked to actual Republicans, not a single one has had Ukraine even on their top 10 list of issues. And he was going into detail about how we need to stop all the reckless spending in Ukraine. That was his main point. But he also talked about a lot about other stuff like girls and boys sports. Just he went on a roll. It was a traditional Trump speech, like you would say, a lot of different topics covered.
How was the crowd? Were they into it? Were they energetic?
For a Tuesday afternoon, it was a really good crowd, really energetic crowd, like estimate around 600, almost 700 people there.
Wow.
But for a Tuesday afternoon, really energetic crowd up there.
That's what Todd Rokita said to us when he was just in studio a couple hours ago. What did Representative Jim Banks have to say? He's obviously running for bronze seat in the Senate.
He was just making a pitch to us about why we should vote for him. His main point was that he was not going to be one of these Republicans that will bow down to the Democrats. He's not going to agree to work with the Democrats like you see some wishy-washy Republicans in Washington right now. He will actually fight for you.
Did anybody recognize you from being on the Hammer and Nigel show, Chris?
Yeah, there were a couple people out there that knew who I was.
Oh, bullcrap. Bull, you're lying. There's nobody that recognized who the hell you are.
I think you're just mad that more people know who I am now than you.
Oh, come on. Come on. So this was a big event down in Shelbyville earlier today. I think there's another event in Greenwood tonight where Don Jr. might be the keynote speaker for that. Chris mm-hmm. Hammer, my son, joins us. He was there for the big event. How's college life going? Do you have any of these super liberal college professors trying to pump propaganda into your head, kid?
I do not. I love all my professors at UND right now. It's a really good school, and I'm enjoying life there right now.
Good. We've got one of your professors on the show tomorrow, Dr. Laura, longtime friend mm-hmm. of the show. So,
how's bowling going, bud?
Went pretty well. Our season's over now. It was really fun. Got to travel to a bunch of different states around here and made some new friends. Pretty cool experience.
Do you pick up a lot of chicks being a bowler?
Are there any bowling groupies?
I don't know about that. I'll have to
That's a
back
no.
to you on that one.
That's a negative.
Yeah, that's going to be a negative.
All right, Chris. Well done, sir. Thank you for being our eyes and ears at that big event, and I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, no problem. See you guys.
That's Chris Hammer, the spawn of me. He went down to the big Trump Jr. event. This is the Hammer and Nigel Show.